Let's go.
You're listening to Making Data Simple, where we make the world of data effortless, relevant, and yes, even fun.
Podcast listeners, welcome to Making Data Simple. Al Morton here, your host. As usual, I'm traveling again, so I don't have my fancy microphone in front of me, and I may have some background noise. If I do, I'll do the best to have the producers take that out. However, if not, please give us a little latitude today. I have a terrific guest in Toby Cathard. Toby blends a background in electronic engineering, man after my own heart once again, nanotechnology, already takes it further than I do, MarTech, which to my understanding is marketing tech. He's had previous roles at IBM, which I, look, we're going to have to talk about that. If you've been at IBM, that's obviously where I am. McLaren, all right, now he's an F1. Salesforce, Braze, I could go on and on. Today, you are the chief product officer for Frazee. Welcome. We'll have a good chat. I think the topic today is around AI and marketing. We got a lot of AI and marketing. I've had several people on the podcast with AI for marketing. I'm sure you're the best, though. That's the difference here. So if you would, give us a little intro about your experience, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, thanks a lot. And it's great to be on the show. So yeah, I'm the chief product officer of Frazee, and we generate and optimize high-performant brand language for brands to communicate with their customers on their terms. We use a combination of technologies that allows us to generate language, predict the performance of that language, and then optimize that wherever their customers are, whether it's on an email or a push notification or on a website. And yeah, I've been in different places within the industry, as you said, IBM, McLaren, Salesforce, and most recently Braze. And that's given me quite, I think, a breadth of experience that enables me to kind of come into this role and do what we're doing today. So yeah, great to be on the show. And yeah, pleasure to meet you.
What's your experience with IBM? Was that a short, long tenure? What was it?
It was a previous life of mine. So I was part of the IBM Futures program pre-university. And that's a program where they take people out of high school effectively and then put them in various different roles around the business. I was based in the Hursley office in the UK, and I was on the system administration team for the what's called the Platform Technology Center. So giving Java developers and other teams the tools necessary to be able to execute and do their job effectively. It's not necessarily the space I'm in today, but I was there for a year. And then that gave me, I think, a good foundation to go into university and do electronic engineering and nanotechnology beyond that, and then enter into the MarTech space.
But you were part of our Futures program, which ironically, you're not currently part of the future. You're with another company.
Depends how you describe AI. Perhaps not at IBM, but I think the area that we're in is certainly part of the future in itself. So it was certainly a good foundation for me to kind of catapult into the rest of my career.
Now, are you a marketing genius, or are you a technology genius, or where does the, you know, if I push you over on one side of the fence, where do you land?
I wouldn't describe myself as either genius, but I think if you were to place me, it would be somewhere in between the two. I've been on the go-to-market side at Salesforce and at Braze, being in that kind of interface actually on the go-to-market side between product and sales, talking about positioning and really understanding customers' needs and what they want out of SaaS products and as it relates to marketing. And so I actually think my skill set firmly sits between those two areas. And that's what gives me the right, experience to be able to understand both what customers want and how to build products that ultimately they're gonna resonate with.
And what do you do at McLaren?
McLaren, I was part of the applied sciences division, and it was around how it was on the electronic engineering side, where it was how the vehicles, how the Formula One cars would communicate with the pits, and how basically we could optimize and make more efficient the communication between the telemetry of the vehicles and what they were seeing in the pits themselves.
But that wasn't sexy enough for you?
I wanted a job that was kind of more human focused. I really liked the interface between psychology, human psychology and technology. And I think MarTech is that interface between building tools and capabilities within a product that that interfaces with humans on both in both the technology side and what you build, but also I wanted a role where I spoke to people a lot, and I wanted a role that I communicated and engaged with people, and I didn't really get that at McLaren. So the idea was that I would go into something a little bit more customer facing, and that's what led me into Salesforce, and then moving over to what was then AppBoy, that was rebranded as Braze, all the way actually through to IPO. I was there for about 7 years. Yeah, all of these kind of components I feel kind of gave me a kind of a spread of, to your point before, a technology backdrop, but also then a marketing backdrop as well. And then this role is kind of the combination of all of those various different roles together.
Am I out of the loop? I don't know that I've heard the term MarTech before. Is that a common term?
I mean, it is in my space, but I'm probably biased in that regard. It's any kind of technology, typically SaaS, that enables businesses to scale their marketing capabilities across many different digital channels. It doesn't have to be digital channels, but in the case of Salesforce and Braze, it's about how to send the right message to the right person at the right time, using things like channel preference, send time optimization, and basically taking user attributes and profile data and working out actually what does this person want to receive. It's kind of the antithesis of spam, right? It's being able to articulate to a customer the value proposition of your brand, but using technology to do so.
And now you're the chief product officer. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so at Frazee, as you can probably tell, AI is quite a big hot topic at the moment. And what Frazee does is takes that last space or undisrupted space, I think, in MarTech or marketing in general, really, which instead of just thinking about what's the right channel to send a message and what's the right time to send that message and what should your marketing messages be, but actually what's the content of those messages. You know, historically this has been done and still is done by copywriters, you know, literally writing copy to put into these various different messages. And I think brands today have multiple challenges. One is a scale challenge. You know, if you want to be able to test tons of different messages across multiple channels, you need to be able to create tons of content. And the challenge you have today is if you want to be able to test across, as I say, many different touch points, the website, the, as I say, push notifications, emails, SMS, whatever it might be, you need to be able to generate huge amounts of content. And so that's what we enable our customers to do, to generate huge amounts of content. But you also don't know how to generate good content and come up with good content. And so whilst half the problem is generating content at scale, the other problem is that a lot of the time marketing is, I'm going to write this subject line and we're going to see if it works. Or I'm going to write the email body of this and I think this is going to be good and it's on brand. But you don't know until you try it. And so Frazee gets ahead of that. And then actually using a number of different tools and capabilities enables us to generate not only lots of language, but language that is high performant, that we know based on 10 years of empirical data is going to be better than a human control. And enabling these brands also to be highly articulate in what's the brand voice, the tone of voice, what are the brand controls, and enabling them to input that into our system to enable us to generate high volumes of high performance on brand language. So that's the elevator pitch, as it were. But there's also a lot of different components within this that enables us to do this, as I say, at scale, but also without things like hallucinations, which a lot of time large language models will tend to do, because if you try and do something a lot of times, it can kind of go off piece sometimes. So it's being able to build this, what we describe as enterprise tooling, that takes these kind of raw language inputs from not only large language models, but also our own deterministic models, and do so that is in an entirely controlled and performant manner. So that's effectively what we're trying to do, and that's what we're building. We've been actually around for quite a while. We're about a 9-year-old company now. I've joined more recently, but what's interesting is that it's a really interesting space where it's a immature market, but quite a mature product. And how do we It's actually very good for us that this people are kind of coming around to the idea that this is possible, and we're able to speak to the marketplace about the value of what we have to bring.
Wow, that's a lot, man. So the bottom line is this all built on large language models? I mean, is this true AI we're talking here, or is it some of its large language models, some of its machine learning? What are we talking about in terms of the technology?
It's all of the above. We see large language models as a component of a much larger technology. You know, we see large language models as a tool within a toolkit that we provide our customers. We also have our own way of generating language at scale that gives you a lot of control. Large language models give you a lot of creativity, but in all honesty, a lot of these AI tools out there are these kind of LLM wrappers, as you'd call them, where, you know, they're merely just an interface on top of a large language model. We've built a much larger engine that large language models is merely a cog, if that makes sense. And so I think it does use large language models. We have machine learning, we use neural networks to predict performance of language, but at the same time it's not just what we do, and it's a small component of the whole picture.
So what's the larger component then?
Well, there's lots of components. You know, I think that the toolkit itself is saying, if you're renovating your house, you know, you need more than just a hammer, you know. And I think what we have is, as I say, other components such as our own deterministic models that is not probabilistic like, or not wholly probabilistic like a large language model would be. And we also separate, we kind of call it the separation of church and state, as it were, as it relates to, there's generating content, and then there's working out which of that content is going to be performant. And I think it's very easy to think that just because ChatGPT exists, it can come up with marketing content, but it doesn't know that it's going to be good marketing content. It's just putting words in front of each other that it thinks looks like a subject line or looks like a push notification if you ask it that question. And so it's about ensuring that we are using the right tool for the job, as it were, to enable our customers to extract value from the AI space, whether it's machine learning or neural networks or large language models themselves, but having multiple components of this to have a complete platform that takes into account the best, you know, uses the right tool for the job and the best parts of each one of them.
So I know you've done work, if I can say so, with enterprise clients such as Walgreens, Macy's, Curry's. Can you describe the nature of that work to maybe put this together so we kind of get a visual on what kind of marketing you're providing?
Yeah, exactly. So, so what they'll do is they will input their tone of voice, their brand tone of voice. They'll input their brand guidelines, and you'll use the platform to say, we've got let's say it's an e-commerce company. They'll say we've got a Black Friday campaign. Next Friday, and the system will generate huge amounts of copy that they can use that's aligned to their brand, that it's going to be high performance, and then we'll inject that content through things like email service providers or customer engagement platforms. Braze is a good example that we partner with, where that will then deliver that content to, or Salesforce Marketing Cloud is another good example, but that will deliver that content to those customers. And so we're basically the front end of coming up with marketing content, where we're generating all these different pieces of content that we know based on, as I say, 9 years of empirical data about what content works, and then delivering that through those delivery mechanisms, and then having a feedback loop of what's working and not working. So we'll get things like clicks and opens and conversions and all that kind of stuff, and that's feeding the system to understand, okay, this is working, this isn't working, and then we'll add new things like new variants over time. And I think what's really interesting that we're building now, that's going to be released in June, is the idea of personalization. So it's historically, marketing is about what is the best subject line for this campaign. I've got this Black Friday campaign coming up. What is the best subject line that's going to get people to come onto my website and make a purchase? What is the best content for this strategy we have? But no one's really thinking about what is the best content for that person? What's the best subject line or push notification that is entirely individualized to that individual person? And I think that's really exciting that this technology allows. It allows us to say to you, you might receive an email that is short and maybe informal and exciting, where I might receive and that's the kind of content that's going to resonate with you. Whereas I might receive a message based on who I am that is longer and maybe more formal, or maybe, you know, using, you know, British English instead of American English. You know, it's about really aligning content to individuals rather than just the marketing campaign itself. And I think that's really exciting because no one's doing that today. You know, the idea that a brand can communicate with users on an entirely one-to-one basis, I think is really exciting. And it also means that the customers of those brands are being communicated in a way that they want to be communicated with. They're resonating with that language because that language is bespoke to them. And I think that's what you can do when you can scale up content to do 55,000 permutations of a particular piece of content or in a particular channel, and then map exactly which one of those variations is going to work for that particular person. And I think that's really exciting and really cool that I don't think anyone's been able to do yet.
Now, is that just data analytics, or is that also AI generated?
It's all of the above. You know, we might find that people over a certain age in a certain region of a certain demographic like particular types of content. We're mapping language attributes, so sentiment, length, to say urgency, formality. We're mapping that to profile attributes, to people's preferences, and then we're generating all that content. We're generating the content that ultimately then gets mapped to the right user and then gets delivered to the right user. And so it's a combination of insights and generation, optimization, and performance prediction all in one.
Well, speaking of map, though, I mean, look, I think you probably know this and can do this in your sleep, but can you drill one more level down, peel the onion back one more time? So you just outline kind of what that experience is. This is how it would work. This is how the customer would feel this marketing. This is what we'd see in the background. This is how we'd assess whether it's working or not. Can you give us like a journey?
Yeah. So you would put in your campaign brief. As I say, we want to do a Black Friday campaign and send out a bunch of messages. And this could be anything. It could be in travel and hospitality. It could be financial services. I'm just using e-commerce as an example. They put in their campaign brief. We would generate a huge corpus of language that is diverse, that has different sentiments and lengths, that's aligned to the brand identity effectively. And then we would send out those messages through those partners, through those delivery mechanisms. And then we're going to get insights back, and we're going to start to see.
How do you deliver it though? I mean, sorry to interrupt, but so yeah, no, deliver it, email, or is it?
We'll deliver it to the ESPs and the CPs. So what we'll do is, a business like Braze or a platform like Braze and Salesforce Marketing Cloud or Adobe Journey Optimizer, Iterable, MoEngage, all these various different engagement platforms, and they're the ones delivering the messages in the right channel, and they're requesting us and you know, to get technical, it's an API that says give me the subject line for user 123. And this is a little bit about them, and we'll say, great, this is the language that you should include in that message. And that language has been selected based on who that end person is. And so then that platform is the one to actually deliver that message to the customer. So,
do you have
so
any like examples of that language that you're referencing? Like, what would that language work like?
Yeah, so it could be using that Black Friday example. It could be maybe you left a pair of sneakers in your cart on an e-commerce website, and maybe it's sunny this weekend, you know, where you are, right? And so the message for you might be, hey, still thinking about going for a run this weekend? Grab those trainers, grab those sneakers that you left in your cart, and we've got 50% off on Black Friday. And so it's and that sentiment and length is specifically applied to who you are. So the idea is that we can be entirely contextual of who the person is, what the content needs to be, and parameters around preferences, but also what product is being put into the message. And we kind of see it as the end of this kind of say goodbye to hello first name. You know, all these brands, all these marketing platforms always do like, you know, hi, first name, you know, you left product name in your cart, complete your purchase now. And what we're doing is we're generating entire natural language that is entirely bespoke to that individual person. And that's what we're coming out with this summer that I think is going to be really exciting.
Is there really nobody else matching this kind of marketing to individual?
They have the data. They have the data, which is great. No one's applying generative AI or generating natural language and performant natural language to this, at least not that we're aware of at the scale that we're able to do it. There's lots of technologies, even since the advent of ChatGPT, that's able to give you six potential subject lines that will work out which is the best one for this campaign. But I've not seen anybody else being able to say, actually, let's generate 100,000 different variations and then match all those permutations or combinations of attributes with natural language with the end user. And that is, it hasn't been possible until now. And I think that's where it becomes interesting. Suddenly, you're not just receiving generic language that doesn't really mean anything to you. Suddenly, you're receiving language which is really resonating and interesting to you, and brands start communicating with you on your terms. And you know, you're not getting these unrelatable spam messages from these brands.
Do you use your own language model? I would presume you're using some kind of third-party language model.
We use a combination. So we have our own what we call deterministic model, which is rule-based, where we've got what we call the language tree, which is I would describe as a hierarchical corpus or lexicon of terms that we'll piece together. So we'll have different bits of language which we know work, and then combine. There's only so many ways that you can say a 10-word subject line. There's only so many permutations. So we'll use a deterministic model that is the proprietary, that's in-house built, but we'll also augment that with OpenAI's latest models, whether it's GPT 4.5 or whatever it might be, or whatever latest model they might come out with. And then we've also got things like Anthropic Claude, which we also used, as I say, to augment the language that we're generating and being able to do that at scale. So like I say, they're all kind of pieces in a much larger engine that all work together to be able to do this and then insulate these brands from some of the challenges of any single one of them. Because if you just ask, like I say, ChatGPT to generate a ton of content, it can't do at massive scale without hallucinating and coming up with something weird. And it doesn't know if it's going to be any good. And so we're combining the creativity of large language models with control and scale. And that enables us to do what we're doing.
Maybe a silly question then. What does it mean to win a campaign?
Well, that's a really good question. And I don't think anyone quite knows, really. Well, I mean, typically it's things like campaign uplift. So it's things like, you know, is this subject line generating more, resulting in more clicks than another one, right? It was more resonant with the largest cohort of people. And so it worked more. But actually, I think we're coming to a world where, and a lot of our customers are asking this, is that really on the case of personalization, they feel like it's incumbent upon them as a brand to be more personalized, regardless of the results it necessarily gives. You know, they want to be, I'm sure the more personalized you are with your marketing, the less unsubscribes you might get, or the fewer unsubscribes you might get, the greater lifetime value of that customer. Perhaps their cart, their basket is of a greater value. And we're only starting to really understand what is the impact of different language on someone's loyalty to a brand. And it's more than just this email got open more than that one. It's really about brand loyalty, and it's about ensuring that your customers aren't feeling like your content is not relevant to them.
How do you sell that though? Here's where I'm coming from. I'm just being very transparent. Sometimes I struggle with marketing because it's hard to determine whether it's making a difference or not. And right. You know, like when you're selling software, it's like, oh, we had 1,000 client interests. Okay, great. Did anybody buy? Well, we had 1,000 client interests. Okay, is that good? You know, they say your job is to sell it. My job is to get the client interest. Marketing won. But why didn't you give me 2,000 client interest? Because we gave you 1,000. I mean, I guess what I'm trying to ask, how, like, when you're going in with the tooling you have, you're getting to the point you're going to make it personalized, et cetera. What is your, like, 2-minute pitch? Here's the return on investment that you're going to see when you go with, you know, Frazee. This is it. Usually you're spending money to make money or you're spending money to save money. I think in this case, you're spending money probably to make money. So how do you prove that no-brainer decision?
You kind of need to look at a lot of data points, I think, in that. And you're right. Marketing can be, you know, brand can be very ambiguous. You know, how do you quantify the value of spending millions putting your logo on a sports stadium, right? Like, how do you value that relative to the cost? How does ROI work? I mean, there is a world where you can see what was your marketing before using something like Frazee and what does it look like afterwards? You can't also attribute, you know, macroeconomic events to certain things in an easy way. You can't attribute how different things which are maybe more ambiguous and doesn't necessarily directly tie to the bottom line or the top line of your business. But I do think that there's intrinsic value in having brands be more personalized with their customers and being more relevant. And if there are reward functions that we can receive that enables us to understand that this language was a little bit better than that language, and then we can map that across demographics, meaning that, you know, if your brand spoke a little bit more positively or maybe a little less formally or anything like that, what's going to happen is we start to see, okay, well, actually, this demographic started doing a little bit more on the website. They started to unsubscribe less on the messages. And so you kind of have to take all those data points into account. And you're right. If there isn't this direct feedback loop of ROI, this is absolutely happening. It can be hard, but that doesn't mean it's not intrinsically valuable in itself. I think if you look at between a brand that doesn't market to their customers and one that does, you know, I think it's clear that there's going to be a difference. But
how would you sell it? I mean, so if you're pitching me, and look, think of it this way, you probably have 35,000 people that'll listen to this podcast, and they'll say they can either call you or Frazee afterwards, or they can just say, oh, that was interesting. They can move on. This is your opportunity to make them go, oh, that is interesting. I could use this marketing. Now, not everybody may be in the market for marketing, but if they are, what would you say?
Well, the first step is I would say, are you generating enough content that you want? Right. And typically the answer is no. Typically the answer is we're not able to keep up with, we're not able to, we want to be able to test more. We want to be able to send more, but we actually can't. We don't have the resources available to us. And so one is that, you know, I always think about people say, AI is going to take my job or AI is going to do what I do. What we're doing is what they wouldn't have been able to do in the first place. You know, I think about it in terms of you can build a car with a bunch of people, but you need the robots, you need the articulating arms to scale that up to 10,000 in a month. And so we're generating volumes of content that wasn't able to be done before. So that's the first step. And the second part is that based on our empirical data over the last, let's say, 9 years, we're able to beat human controls at open rates and click-through rates of emails just based off the generating of the content 94% of the time. And we haven't seen, when we're optimizing that content through the ESP, we've yet to see a time where our language hasn't beaten a human control at those opens. And so just out of the gate, you're doing more with less. And that stuff that you're doing more is better than you could do in the first place. And so that's the kind of the pitch. But I also think, as I say, there's plenty of more metrics that you could look at that we're looking at today, where I think it actually is having a much larger impact than just click-through rates and opens.
That was my next question. I know you got click-through rate, but what about, and that's an important one, by the way. I mean, not discounting that. What other KPIs usually throw out?
So we're looking at it. I mean, this is such nascent technology that I do think things like how many people now you're personalizing your content, how many people are unsubscribing from your emails? You know, is that less than it was before? What's the lifetime value of those customers when you had that Black Friday campaign? Was the individual basket sizes any bigger? Have you, as a result of these campaigns, have you retained a lot more customers? Are they happier customers as a result? And so we're looking at all these different areas to say, actually, you know, what's working, what's not working. But I also think that the other flip side of the value of this is the insights itself. So, you know, we're finding that, you know, they might not know that there's a whole demographic of people that doesn't resonate with their brand language. You know, there's a whole group of people in a certain area of a certain age that they thought that this marketing campaign was going to work with, that we found out with just tweaking the language in a certain way and talking about slightly different things, now their brand language resonates. And maybe it tells them, we need to change our brand identity a bit. We need to maybe think about how we talk about our products and services in a slightly different way, and because of the insights this technology has given us. And so even if you get no value out of the performance of your campaigns, knowing the dials and the levers you have to pull to be able to resonate more with your customers, I think is valuable in itself. And so there's kind of multiple layers to this that I think that can be valuable.
What can Frazee do that no one else can do, period?
Certainly the scale piece, certainly the piece around generating huge amounts of language, being able, you know, we did a recent campaign with a large e-com sports provider that we generated 55,000 variants of an abandoned basket campaign, 55,000 different ways of saying you left that, you know, sneakers in your basket. No one else is able, from what I can tell, able to generate at that scale. And when you generate at that scale, only then can you personalize those variants to individuals. And so I think in that case, the scale is really important.
In my mind, though, I'm thinking, why do you need 55,000? Maybe you only need one. But you're saying, no, you would need 55,000 if it's saying it differently to 55,000 people to make them pull the trigger.
You know, maybe you're right. Maybe we're not all as unique as we think we are. You know, maybe there's an element, maybe there is a billboard, you know, line that you can put up there that everyone goes, that's a great campaign. And I think maybe that is true. You get these marketing campaigns, these Super Bowl ads that everyone goes, that's great. But all that's really going to do is resonate with the largest cohort of people. Right? Like the best piece of content is only going to resonate with the largest group of people. And it's always going to be a bell curve. There's always going to be a long tail of people that say, I don't relate to that. I don't think that's anything to do with me. And that's where personalization comes in, that you can start to resonate with that long tail of people that wouldn't have resonated with just one piece of content. And what that bell curve looks like may be very different depending on the industry you're in. Maybe it's different depending on the type of products and services you provide. But either way, it's the holy grail, right, of a company to come out with, you know, a marketing campaign that everyone finds amazing. But I also think there's a company in the UK called Dolmio that makes pasta sauces, right? And I don't know how true this story is, but it's a good analogy where all these competing pasta sauces were trying to make the best bolognese, right? The best, you know, the best thing that everyone when they're at home says, oh, it's like my mom's cooking, right? But actually everyone's mom's cooking isn't the same as the other person's, right? And what they did was they made 20 different types of bolognese, one with mushrooms in it and one that had chunky vegetables in it and one that had less meat and whatever it might be. And actually the right answer to this isn't there's the best subject line or the best marketing piece of content that works for everybody. Everyone does have individualized needs and wants, and being able to cater to those is only going to result in resonating with customers wherever they are.
Where do you think marketing is going to be in the next few years? I mean, I'd say two part question. Where do you think marketing is going to be, and where do you think technology, could be AI, could be other, where is technology going to play in marketing in the next few years?
So I think we're going to see, especially around AI, I think we're going to see large language models used more, but not necessarily in isolation. I think large language models are incredibly useful tools to do any number of things. You know, they're generally very impressive. But I also think when you're thinking about specific applications, you need to take the value of what they're able to provide and multiply that, but also insulate yourself from the challenges that they have. And so I think we're seeing a lot of these large language model wrappers be able to do copywriting assistance and do very singular things. But I think where it's heading is actually you're going to get these large enterprise tool sets that use, as to say, just like Frazee, you're using it in a much larger piece rather than just having an API that hits ChatGPT to give you a response. It's how do you use them as agents within the stack to do different things within it itself. So I think it's more integration of large language models, I think, is naturally going to happen. But it's going to happen in a much more thoughtful way. And I think that then we'll see that being used a lot more in different places where maybe we didn't expect them to be used.
You don't think AI is going to take the place of marketing altogether at some point?
Well, it depends what you mean by that, right? Maybe you'll just ask something to do your campaigns for you. But at the same time, I do think it's going to be very disruptive to the market. I mean, marketing is going to be hugely disrupted, if not already hugely disrupted by AI. But it's not just ask ChatGPT to do your marketing campaigns. It's using those large language model outputs and using different types of prompt engineering or using the outputs in different ways to augment a lot of the capabilities and technology you're doing today. You know, there's a lot of large brands out there which do things in very old-fashioned ways, and it's going to take them quite a long time to get these things on board. And I think it's a whole industry of technology that is going to be disrupted, but it's going to happen, I think, in different places and at different times. And these large language models are going to be absolutely leveraged, but they're not going to be the be-all and end-all. They're going to be, as I say, a tool within the tool set to be able to then achieve those results. And I also think from, as I said earlier, that marketing is going to go from generic to incredibly personalized. That what this technology and capabilities allow is to do things at great scale and do things that humans weren't able to do in the first place. It's not about just saving you time. It's doing stuff that ultimately you wouldn't been able to do alone.
You don't think there's going to be some pushback on that? I mean, here's why I say that. A lot of times when your marketing is personal, it kind of feels a little bit maybe too personal.
I don't know.
Like, what are they doing? What are they watching? You know, I mean, it's like, how many times are you with a colleague, friends, whatever, and they say, "See, my phone's listening to me because it's bringing up exactly what I was talking about 2 minutes ago."
Yeah, no, I get you, and that's true. And I think that it's a great question. I think it's the interface with relevance. You know, I could say to you, you're walking down the street, you walk past a retail store, and you get a push notification that says, "Hey, you know, that thing you left in your basket, you know, that's in the store right now." And you're like, "Well, that's a little intrusive. How do you know where I am? And, you know, that doesn't feel right." Or you could get a SMS that says, "You've got a doctor's appointment tomorrow and your prescription is ready and it's 2 miles down the road and, you know, your appointment with doctor, blah, 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 is at this time." That latter message uses so much more data about you. Your health information, who's your doctor, what prescriptions you have. But that was a very relevant message to you. And you're like, "That's actually really useful for me. Now I know where to go. And now I know, you know, that, you know, like where my appointment is." And the first one uses less data, but it is intrusive. And it's all about contextual relevance, about actually what's valuable to you versus not valuable. Because I think personalized and unvaluable is weird and creepy. Personalized and valuable is that's actually really useful to me. And it's enabling people to be personalized, or brands to be personalized and relevant and valuable to their customers.
So, and the goal of this personalized. Personalized for you. That's what I got out of this. I mean, the more
personalized. That's the thing. I mean, it is the antithesis of personalization is spam, right? It's stuff that's not relevant to me. I don't know why I got it. It's not telling me anything that I want to hear. And it's totally unpersonalized. And so the idea of this is not to be creepy and is not to be, you know, intrusive or anything like that. It's actually the opposite. The idea of this is to have people actually go, "You know what, that was really useful. And that was valuable to me and relevant to me. And I'm not going to unsubscribe from this nonsense because it's giving me stuff that I don't need or want." And I think that's the difference between what we're trying to do and the what can be intrusive. Because I would argue, to your point, that intrusive Instagram message that goes, "Why? How does it know that? And, you know, I didn't look that up or anything like that." That's spam to me. I mean, it's unrelevant. And I think that's where that interface lies. It's not about personalization per se. It's about just as much relevance of that personalized content.
That might be a perfect note to end on, but I want to make sure, did we hit on all the topics that you would have liked to hit on today?
Absolutely. I can talk all day about this stuff, but yeah, we probably don't have all day. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. And hopefully you and your listeners understand a little bit more about what we do and the value we can bring. Thanks for having me.
Where can folks reach you and where can folks reach Frazee?
Very easy to find me. I mean, I'm toby@frazee.co. If people want to email me, I probably regret giving out my email address on this, but who knows? But yeah,
spam
we're Frazee.
Toby. Spam Toby. Everybody.
We're relevant personalized messages only. But yeah, we're at frazee.co. And we've been around for a while. You know, we've got some great customers. And so I think some people know us already. But I think we're now in the right time to capitalize on this advent of AI. And I think people are starting to pick up on I think the value we can bring. So yeah, it's an exciting time.
What do you do for fun, Toby?
What do I do for fun? It's a good question. I don't have a lot of time for fun these days. No, I enjoy traveling. I live in New York City, as you can probably tell from my accent that I'm not originally from here, although I'm working on my Brooklyn accent.
Yes, so it's just like New York City.
Yeah, and I like traveling. I do a lot of sailing as well, which I really enjoy. Yeah, hanging out with friends and family, and I think just as much as anybody else. So,
fantastic. Thank you for being here, man. Learned a lot about marketing and personalization. I like
thanks,
AI to personalization.
Appreciate it.
That's terrific. Listeners, thank you for listening. As always, you guys are the best. So reach out to us anytime. AlMartinTalksData@gmail.com. Love to hear from you. Until next time, I shall see you on the podcast. Later, guys.